KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
Tune in Tuesday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. for The Melting Pot, featuring DJs, producers, and electronic artists from around the globe. Win tickets and stay up on events each and every Tuesday from 8 to 10 p.m. on The Melting Pot, right here at 90.7 FM KBOO.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO FM, 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 FM in Corvallis, Albany. Via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and today is Monday, the 3rd of February, 2020. Our numbers for those who wish to call in and be a part of our conversations are 503-231-8187. You may give us a call and share your thoughts and your wisdom with your listeners and with all of us. For those of you who are listening live, on this Monday morning at about 8:01 on February 3rd, we just heard the Democracy Now! Broadcast. The broadcast, as always, had a number of interesting points. But one thing I want to talk about is the last segment in which Amy Goodman interviewed Lori Garrett, who is a former senior fellow for Global Health at the Council on Foreign Relations and a Pulitzer Prize winning science writer. The conversation was about the coronavirus outbreak that continued to spread indeed throughout the world. Celeste and I thought it might be interesting to not focus on the science of this virus and how it, the science of the virus per se, but to focus on the how we are responding to it. You may have noticed, much like other crises, health crises throughout the world, In the past, whether it's the SARS crisis or the Ebola crisis in years past, how nations respond to it. Our observation is that it's oftentimes, as is the case I think we can see now in the early stages of how this nation in particular, people in this nation are responding to the coronavirus, is that it is a case of xenophobia and not so subtle racism. We want to talk about that this morning and have your reflections about that. If you just look through your news feed, you see stories of how people are responding in very, I would say, strange xenophobic ways in which certain people, certain populations, people who are perceived to be those who might be infected by this virus attack isolated, not because of the science, but more so because of the perception and what I think is not so subtle racism. So we'll share with you a couple of stories we've come across in the last few days about that, about this virus, and about people's response to it. So a question we have for you this morning is, how do you think our nation is responding to this crisis? And what can you say to counter the xenophobic racist response that is so much a part of this nation's or many people's response to it? In this in the interview that Amy Goodman had with Lori Garrett, they also mentioned also in terms of U.S. official policy, and I think it's one thing to talk about people on an individual community level's response, but also I think is important to remember and to see how our nation's government is responding to this. It is not, I don't think people can ignore the fact that and the Lori Garrett and Amy Goodman talked about this in passing, the official administration's response, whether it's from the Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who a few days ago on I think probably Fox News thought that, oh, this is a good thing because it will accelerate the return to jobs to the United States, and so the virus is spreading, and so this is a good thing, so jobs will return back to the United States. Or the observation by the Secretary of State, Pompeo, and the conflation of attacking this health crisis with U.S. immigration policy and the conflation of looking at this with the U.S. immigration policy and the impact it will have on, I hadn't thought about this, but this potential ban on, in terms of the ban on pharmaceutical drugs, with many of which comes from China. So lots of things we can talk about in relation to the coronavirus and our response to it, whether it's on individual community levels and how do we resist xenophobia and racism as a response to this health crisis. You are listening to More Talk Radio. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And we will interested in hearing your response, your initial response of how this disease is being reported and policies, whether it is in airports or places such as that, and in communities, how it's impacted in places where people gathered, how people respond on airlines, in bus terminals, in the supermarkets, in schools, who's targeted, all sorts of different things, different ways. And, you know, things like this happen. It brings out, I don't want to say the worst, but just how people, it's different. What do you think, Celeste?
You know, and I just sent you, I just finished pulling off another story that I wanted to add to this. And I was thinking as I was listening to you of how this unfortunately has, even though we talked about this and touched on it a little bit earlier, last week especially, this week is not my best week for trying to find the best in people, or I should say Sunday didn't open yeah, the week.
You had
as thinking of the best in people, because I am really struggling right now to understand why we treat each other the way we do. And I even had this conversation with a couple of people last week about man's inhumanity, you know, to man, people's inhumanity to each other, you know, human being to human being, not treating each other well. And so you would think that this would, in this day of so-called science, it would help us understand that it's by coming together and supporting each other that we can combat a disease which does not discriminate, you know. So here's the irony of it. You know, you have human beings who discriminate, and you have a disease that does not.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not in the best, because yesterday I had some items stolen from my vehicle that absolutely make no sense. And one friend said, well, you should have had the hard top on. And I'm thinking, yeah, the last time I had a major theft like that, they broke the window. So it doesn't matter. There is no security. So what I found myself doing is trying to struggle to put my mind in a place that kept me from being angry. Now, when I hear about how people are targeting each other because somebody might be sick, or because they might be of an ethnic group that is perceived to be the precipitator of this disease, that makes me even more sad.
Yes.
You know, because here's an opportunity where we could work together. Even if, you know, people don't have all of the amenities, it was not even amenities, let's call it necessities, you know, to live a healthy life. Maybe they don't have running water. Maybe this is a country that has challenges with infrastructure. So everybody doesn't have the level of opportunity to keep themselves healthy and clean and protect themselves because of the political environment they live in and the social environment. You know, you don't target those people. And if nothing else, you try to figure out what do you need to help be healthy,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that you're not a contagion spreader. You're not spreading, a disease. And it really upsets me that we hasten our own demise by treating each other so poorly. And so I thought, okay, maybe we need to have a conversation about this, you know. Maybe this, you know, maybe me being a little sour right now is a good way to have this conversation, because despite my frustration, I'm still trying to find the ways we can connect. I'm still trying to find the best ways for us to work with each other. I'm still looking at these challenges. So I guess I would put forth the challenge of how can we as a human being more purposefully and positively and life-affirmingly address this? How can we inform ourselves and each other so that we don't penalize people we perceive as being infected with the coronavirus and acting as though they're purposefully spreading it on us? You know, how can we help those who are sick advocate for better treatment? How can we ourselves advocate for better treatment? Because it's for sure we're not going to get anything modeled by our elected leaders. You know, we've got the president already trying to quarantine a quarter of the African continent.
Yeah.
You know, yes. And then you and I were talking about the way that China's been effectively economically targeted and quarantined. You know, we already had the issue with the trade deals and the trade deficit and the imbalance dealt with by Trump's tariffs. And then effectively the airlines are saying they will not fly to China. And when you think about the impact that will have on our own economy, because we can't get goods we need that are made there.
Well, the Commerce Secretary said it's good for it's good for the economy. It'll bring back jobs to the U.S.
Bring back jobs to whom?
Well,
bring back what level of jobs?
But you know, it's good. Let those people get sick, and you know, it's good for the U.S. because we don't have to worry about those foreigners or those people from the what was that beautiful description of African countries that the president called them?
The S word. Nice toilet countries, that's what he called them. That's unfortunate, you know. I don't recall anybody looking at Europe and saying that during the time of the Black Plague, but maybe all that work has been destroyed so we can't read it, you know. But if I recall, did not the Black Plague have its origin not in the United States, not in China, not in Africa? Well, the United States wasn't here then. Let me be honest, it wasn't here then. But I mean, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, what kind of madness is this? How can we as human beings, you know, struggle with this? Challenge your friends and your family and don't go out to any of these hardware stores and buy an infrared heat gun. We have got to step up and be better in this. And I'm not being naive. I used to be a nurse, and people who see me around tell me I'm a stickler for wash your hands. I'd rather have ashy chapped hands in the winter than be sick.
Well, you know, and I mean, appropriate things are necessary. So, you know, before we sat down in this studio, I took the
wipes
and clean off the headphones and the microphones and up. So, you know, appropriate.
And just washing your hands does a lot. But anyway, okay, enough of us rambling and talking and ranting and what have you. 503-231-8187. Join us here on More Talk Radio on your community connection, KBOO Portland. And we'll go to our first caller. Good morning, Camillo.
Good morning. I have a response to the question about how we view the virus per se.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that we view the virus as something external to nature, external to humans' interaction with nature. And we are part of nature as humans. Coronavirus is a part of nature. So it rises out of a systemic relationship. And where they suspected the coronavirus came from is from food that is brought in from the woods, from the forests, that is contaminated and that infects people. And there's an excellent article about it. It's an opinion piece in the New York Times on January 28th called "We Made the Coronavirus Epidemic." It may have started in a bad cave, but human activity set it loose, by David Kamen. And it basically discusses the relationship between human activity and natural hosts. And this really is the perspective of an excellent book by Charles Eisenstein called Climate, A New Study, that tries to look at all the issues of climate in a holistic way, looking at the interaction with nature and the effects that it has on the ecology, and without considering ecology, looking at just climate in terms of carbon and temperature is not going to deal with the problem. But I want to respond to the really fundamental question that you raised about what this is bringing about our relationships among ourselves, how this is bringing out the racism, and how can we overcome that? And there's an organization, it's a national organization that started in Atlanta called Be Present, and it was created 25 years ago to develop leadership among Black women. But it's now inclusive and includes adults, children, men, and women. And we have a very strong group here, a chapter in Portland, and we're trying to develop this and bring people in and let them know what it is that we do. And I just want to mention the fundamental principles that respond to the question that you're asking about how we treat each other, how we communicate, and how we can build a more sustainable kind of interaction. So the we call them the three realms. The first is know oneself outside of the distress of oppression. The second is listen to others in a conscious and present state. And the third is build effective relationships and sustain true alliances. So when you're in a group that's using these concepts, you can't just state your assumptions or your attitudes and leave it at that. You're really asked to examine, what is this coming from inside of you? Are you speaking out of your oppression? Because if that's it, you're never going to come to grips with who you truly are. And that's what we want to be present in the relationship with us. And people who are listening, when they hear somebody speak out of their oppression, they say, well, wait a minute, this is triggering something in me. I want to really listen to you, but I can't while I'm being triggered. And when that process is understood and you're able to reach out to wider groups in the community and develop this kind of interaction, then I think you overcome the kinds of attitudes and prejudices that we're seeing the coronavirus bring out.
Hey,
go ahead, Cesar.
No, I said thank you so much, Camilo, and I just wanted to suggest and urge you to, because you just mentioned this, you know, briefly and you know, 5 minutes, and it seems so much there that we can deal with more. And I want to encourage you. I know I've been in touch with you about the Be Present folks and the potential conference. I want you to reach out to Tammy, our public affairs director, and see if there might be another way in which you might present it to a larger audience at another time when you can speak more in depth to that.
Well, that's what we're trying to do, because we're having a conference here May 1st, and we would love to have a little attention paid by the station, which I think...
Well, don't ignore
really
all the other community media, too, you know, because we have a lot of folks clamoring for airtime, and one good way is to make sure you take advantage of a lot of the community media options, such as Open Signal and our print media and things like Portland Pipeline, PDX Pipeline.
Okay. I'll check that out.
But thank you so much for your call and for just bringing three points to consider when we're trying to figure out what our response is supposed to be. You know, we're too quick to point fingers, as if pointing a finger or getting in somebody's face and accusing them of bringing this disease is going to alleviate any of our problems. It's not. And, you know, you hit the nail on the head. How am I reacting to this? What's the lens I'm looking through? And we thank you so much for your call.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community connection, KBOO Portland. The phone number is 503-231-8187. We want to encourage your calls. You know, we try to share with each other ideas and strategies to inform and better educate ourselves about what's going on in the world, and then also how to shape responses to some of the more challenging dynamics human beings go through. And in society, we already know there are forces at work that want to keep us divided. All you have to do is listen, for example, to the words that come out of our president's mouth when he's describing people he doesn't like, especially women. He uses derisive, divisive, and ugly language, you know, calling people profane names. And he sees that as an answer to just merely disliking somebody because they call you into account. You know, we can do better than that, though. We don't have to use him as a model. Well, he's not a model, except as, you know, model of a waste of human skin. And I'm feeling strongly today. I told you I'm trying to reel it in.
I have not disagreeing with you.
I'm trying so hard to be good. Frustration. And you know, these are the tests we go through, you know. I'm glad I'm appalled that people are treating bad instead of me just being angry at everyone and being unspecific and non-specific in my frustration. So you know, it's behavior.
How can we best bring out the best in all of us when so often the worst is out there for all to see?
Oh my God, not just out to see, but like being promoted and shoved down our throats. Anyway, share some strategies. And we're not naive. We know that this is becoming a possible pandemic, depending on which news source you read. And that's a serious thing. That's a thing that takes away life. So, you know, don't accuse us of downplaying it or naivete. Just come with some solutions.
And our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And let's go to Corey. Good morning, Corey.
Hey, good morning, guys. Calling you from Houston. I'm the ultimate negative spirit. That's just me. That's what a PhD has done. It just made me realize, like, I've done the research. But you guys are exactly right. It's becoming a pandemic, but if we cannot, in the humanistic term, you know, work on something such as this, I'm driving into work today, and there's a Tesla in front of me, and a lot of homeless people, just like Portland and downtown Houston, Texas. Mm-hmm. A homeless gentleman bumped into this man's Tesla. He gets out of his car, shoves the homeless man. So you got out of your car to shove a homeless man because he touched your Tesla.
Your precious. So, that's a shame.
Your precious electric car. So I'm thinking about now, and you mentioned humanization. Certain elements of this population, West population, have gone out of their way to dehumanize certain groups.
Yes.
And especially if you look at the administration, what they've done over the past several years. So when you hear someone like Wilbur Ross, well, Asian people aren't human beings anywhere. They're just a means to an end. They're useful to a certain degree, but they're not, you know, they're not fully human like I am. I'm Wilbur Ross. So, and this is the one thing that I do study, is just this concept of dehumanization. I used to work at Bud Clark Commons, and I was only there.
Oh, yes, I understand that.
Yeah, I could only last there. I was there at the warming shelter. It used to be the downtown YMCA. I don't know what's there now, but to be there for 4 months and to see how dehumanization plays out, and to see how those women were so grateful because in that space they're seen as human beings. Outside of, you know, Portland, Oregon, they're seen as, you know, is something other. So right now, number one, my sister works in medicine. She's like, it could become a pandemic, but one of three things will happen. Either it'll burn itself out, it'll, you know, attack the susceptible people. It will either become, you know, normalized. It will become just like another virus. I think you still have elements of SARS in certain parts of the world, or it'll take us out. And I don't think it's going to take us out. It's basically like a super pneumonia. And the thing about Western medicine is that, you know, we as Americans, we do have ways to survive it ultimately if it comes to that. But I just I lose more and more faith in human nature now, especially, like I said, after what I saw today. Like, you had no reason to. He touched your car, man. Like get over yourself. Like, he touched your electric car. Is going to be okay. You'd rather impede traffic and shove a homeless man to show. And this is also Texas. I'm not getting out of my car. They like to shoot here.
Oh, so yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel bad for the guy, but, you know, it's like I'm still in Houston for the next couple months. Let me chill. But thank you for the show. And I really do, from what the person said on the show before,
Camilla,
becoming a yes. Mm-hmm. It can become a pandemic. I just think from what my little sister said today, she's like, it'll probably burn itself out, but it's going to take out a lot of people before it does that.
Well, you know, we got to lift up each other. If we don't buy into this negative spirit, we can stay healthy. I mean, just giving somebody a hug actually boosts both your and their immune systems, something I learned when I was in nursing school. So if we can remember that those positive interactions boost our immune systems, that will help us a lot more than shoving somebody because they touched your precious.
Hey, Corey, before you leave, and I'm going to ask that you we got a communication from someone who wanted to, I think,
connect with you,
but so
was concerned about what kind of avenues to use.
So
maybe leave a phone number or email where we can check in with you and find out.
Yeah, I can call back and leave a phone number.
Yay! Thank you.
Okay. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you so much.
This is your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. Stay tuned. At 9 o'clock comes the Old Mo Variety Hour. But right now, you've got Cecil and myself, Celeste. We are here with you on More Talk Radio, and we're going to Mary next. Thanks for holding.
Hi.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I appreciate you asking for ideas and strategies from the citizens. I do have a question for you, though. What are the plans and the strategies for the city of Portland to clean up all of the garbage everywhere?
Oh, I wished you'd have asked me this when I was still working for the city, because I was knee-deep, and this is not
literally
a derisive pun, but I was knee-deep in the problem because I served in the East Portland neighborhoods. And I'll tell you what we used to do, and then you can use this as a starting off point to hold people accountable, because there are, and I'm going to say this, city commissioners who don't walk their talk. And right now, I'm not called to specifically point out one, unless that moment comes. But, you know, we used to get together with the neighborhood associations, with organizations like Central City Concern and Join, with businesses, and some of the people who were homeless in the neighborhood, and we'd have meetings, and we would sit down and talk about, what do you need? What do you want? What will you take responsibility for? You know, because there has to be accountability on both sides. And we would talk about trying to connect with the businesses to provide, with the people to provide trash pickup, make sure there was needle exchange, you know, let them know where they could use the restroom, let them know what their responsibilities were, like, you know, keep the area clean, you know. And that's the kind of grassroots effort that it takes to assess what people need. And then once you get that assessment, to take it out to the business partners and the municipal partners and whoever else partners and say, okay, this is your perceived role in it. You know, if we're right, get busy. And if we're not, help us find, you know, the next solution. And you have to hold everybody accountable. And that includes the city and the county and the state for their roles. That's all you can do. You know, blow them up, call them, complain, take pictures, send the pictures, you know, because they're not giving in.
I appreciate that, and I understand that's one process, but all that's occurring and nothing is done. The city is not held accountable. The commissioners are not held accountable. I grew up here. The city is in disarray as it has never been, and it's disheartening and disappointing, and it makes people want to leave. And I know Ted Wheeler would say, well, go ahead and leave, but I don't think I should have to leave. I think the city should clean up this city.
So why
well,
do
so, other cities don't look like this.
Well, so you'd be surprised, Mary. But Cecil, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So I want to ask, you said the city is not held accountable. How should the city be held accountable? What are your suggestions?
Get the city trucks out to clean up the garbage.
Okay, that would be waste management. We should hold the businesses accountable, too, for their part in this. Where are they?
The city, Ted Wheeler is the manager of this city.
Right, but we don't have that service.
He serves at the pleasure of this community. He needs to be held accountable. He needs to take care and clean up. He is the leader. There is no leadership. And I think you know that. If you were true, you understand that. He's no leader. The commissioners have done absolutely nothing. The streets are filthy. The highways are filthy.
Now, the highways,
I have friends that come in.
Well, Mary, let me explain one of the challenges. You have different jurisdictions that have ownership of this. So the city can only clean up so many things, and then it's the state's business. When you see camping on the medians of the highway, that's the state. And the state won't do it. They want the city to do it.
You want the citizens to collaborate and meet and get together. The city, Ted, needs to get together with the state.
Well, I mean, those meetings are happening. They're not necessarily fruitful, but they are happening.
There's meetings everywhere, but there's no execution. Nothing's happening. Nothing's being cleaned up.
I can't argue with you there. I'm just saying that one of the challenges is that you've got some mutual finger pointing instead of action on the part of all of the municipalities. It's not just the city of Portland that has ownership in this. You know, when you've got massive corporations that come in here and they handle our various forms of trash and waste, and they can't donate anything out of their massive amounts of revenue to help, they should be held accountable like any good corporation.
The corporations are doing what they can.
No, they're not.
Doing nothing.
The corporations are not doing what they can.
I'm asking you, what should we do to hold the city accountable? What should you do to hold the city accountable?
I would like to see the city of Portland cleaning up. City employees go out and clean up this city.
Okay, every city employee does not have the specialty or the knowledge to do this. Okay.
The only people that are suffering in this city are the taxpayers.
No, everybody, as a city employee, if you work and live in Portland, you're suffering too. Just because you work for the city doesn't mean that you're complicit.
Probably not a very productive conversation. I've lived here all my life. I've never seen such a horrible side of the city. Ted Wheeler, yourself, the commissioners are responsible to get this cleaned up and nothing.
Well, I can't take responsibility anymore because I don't work for the city.
So,
but I do believe that she's got a valid point. The point is, you can't just rant and say the city needs to do it. You need to look at the areas that have that responsibility and that knowledge and those resources and make sure that those are employed. To say every single employee of the city needs to get out there is not helpful, because people are going to say, well, that's not realistic. And then they'll stymie your whole point instead of looking at the areas that do.
So, yeah, and I think part of the challenge is a frustration, because we look and see things aren't the way they should be or used to be, and we are frustrated, because I kept asking her, well, what is your responsibility? What is our responsibility? Rather than pointing fingers at certain commissioners or agencies, how do we make them do what we want them to do? I don't think I got a clear answer from her.
I think she was too frustrated.
And that's part of frustration. Mm-hmm. And also, I think it's not just a Portland problem.
If you just go
all up and down the West Coast.
And the East Coast. And I was in Atlanta, Georgia, and in St. Louis and parts of Florida, not this summer past, but in 2018. And I was seeing massive homeless camps in various places. It's a collapse of our economy. It's a collapse of society in many ways.
At one time, there was a social network, but in terms of, you know, we can go back, you know, 30, 40 years in terms of the how we work together as a society, in terms of social networks, social support networks, and you know, this is the result of at least nationwide 30, 40 years of the dismantling of the social network system.
And a lot of times by our electeds and corporations.
Yeah,
you know, so.
New economy, the
all of that. And so why you have every reason to be frustrated, Mary, we have to look at, you know, I go out and I'll pick up some trash. That's not necessarily the answer, but I know that if I go and I complain to the not only to the parts of the city and state and county government that handle refuse and trash and human services, but also complain to the corporations that handle it. They could donate some time. I see Central City has put out bags for folks. They collect their trash, they put it on the corners. That's why you see blue and white plastic bags on the corners in the city. And, you know, Central City concerns should be supported in that. That might mean giving them a few dollars to make sure they can do that. It might mean going and finding out what efforts the city and the county and the state have put together to collect trash, and ask why our trash management corporations aren't helping. I don't know the whole answer, but I just know frustration fuels it, but you got to carry through.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and Joan has some wisdom for us. Good morning,
Good
Joan.
Good morning, Joan.
Hello. Well, I hope I have some wisdom. Anyway, what happened with me was I was listening to the BBC late at night, and they were having a program with a panel, an international panel, discussing the homelessness problem. It is international. Mm-hmm. There was someone from France and someone from the Netherlands and someone from Britain and some people from African countries, and they were all discussing the same problem, which is the housing thing is out of control and people cannot afford it. And this is what someone from Germany said about the city of Berlin. She said that the city of Berlin reasoned that the social instability was getting so high, social instability worldwide is what we're talking about, that what they decided to do was roll back all the rents in the city of Berlin till the 2013 prices, because this is when their economy started getting control, and most of the people in the city of Berlin are renters. No one could afford their rents, and the situation was out of control. So they rolled back all the rents and froze them there. Mm-hmm. And that was the city's solution, because if people have a house to live in, they're not going to be sleeping on the street.
Well,
and if you look at
how well that work, how well has that worked so far?
I don't know. This is just what somebody said. So the situation is, yes, it's not only all over this country, it's worldwide.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is that housing, instead of being considered a human right, is considered an investment.
Yes.
And if you look at Oregon, you really look at it, and this can be done online or whatever, there are certain companies like American Homes for Rent is one of them. Colony Starlight Homes or something is another one. I think Jared Kushner and those people are involved in some of that. And who do we have for a president, as long as you mentioned that? How
his
misbegotten money that he may or may not have. The IRS, only the IRS knows for sure.
That can only be
rate,
Donald Trump.
Well, I'm not naming any names.
Oh, I'm just going to call it out.
But this is a business, okay?
Yes.
And these people, these companies, come into places like Oregon.
Yes.
And they buy up houses, they foreclose, they buy them up, they hold them until they can be flipped, and then they sell them. Meanwhile, they rent them out to people, and when the people can't afford the rents, they evict them.
Yes.
And Oregon is being bought and sold. That's my rant right now. And so is every other major city. And this is what's going on.
And
there are people who think, well, gosh, my house is an investment. You know, I worked all my life, I have a house, and now I can sell my house and retire. And you can't really blame people for that necessarily.
No.
But it has become a problem, because it should not be this kind of a business.
No.
Yes.
And there are people who, you know, you can go and buy a house. Nobody needs to come into a city and buy 30 houses and rent them out and think that they're having a business and that they're helping people by giving people rental property, whatever the situation is. But it is an international problem, and we have to deal with it here, because frankly, there's no place else to go.
Well, then you
There's
said
no
it right there. Not only no other country, but no other planet.
Right, exactly. And this is what's happening. And to blame the victims, to say to that guy who's lying on the street on a wet piece of cardboard, who's eating out of a garbage can, that somehow he's to blame. Yeah. I mean, really.
Well, that's, really. You know, that's when people do that, they're succumbing to the propaganda and the programming mindset of distraction and distractibility. And we need to be smarter than that. Look at who's the wizard behind the curtain, y'all, for real.
I mean, it could be looked at what's happening in Scandinavia and in mm-hmm. in the Netherlands. They don't have this kind of problem in this kind of way, I don't believe. And I'm no expert in this. Mm-hmm. All I know is what I heard. And when I heard that panel of people from all over the world discussing this problem, mm-hmm. It's a human problem, and we really have to deal because... You know, I mean, this could happen to anyone.
That's true.
Anyone. Anytime.
Well, thank you, Joan.
And yeah, you're welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank mm-hmm. you.
Bye-bye. I love your show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Joan. And thank you for raising our awareness and reminding us in terms of the international problem, also by pointing out that housing should not be merely an investment. It should be a human right. And all of this is related to neoliberalism and our current economic policies worldwide. You're listening to More Talk Radio, 503-231-8187, and Robert is on the line.
Good morning, Robert.
Oh, hi. There's a series of meetings going on. There's four meetings. Ted Wheeler is talking about homelessness, and all the city agencies that are dealing with homelessness show up. I went to a three-hour meeting on Saturday at PCC on the east side. Mm-hmm. The next one is in Multnomah Village. There's one in North Portland. I mean, you can find them online. Homelessness, Ted Wheeler. Okay, and one of the main things they talk about is picking up trash. Do you realize this city is actually picking up hundreds of thousands of pounds of trash all the time?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, working hard on it. I mean, Mary needs to go to one of these meetings, get involved. See what our city is doing. They're spending millions of dollars on this. I know it's sort of a losing battle. They said that Portland has 4,000 people on the street every night. Okay? They're not the same 4,000.
No,
every
they're not. Year, they circulate.
Every year they put about 2,000 into housing. Mm-hmm. And 2,000 new people get evicted. It's going on. I mean, you're right. It's like capitalism is failing.
Yeah.
That's all.
Well, capitalism has failed many times. It's just that it's been propped up so many times, and we've been lied to about how and when and where it was propped up. We didn't know that, you know. But it's not a failsafe. We don't have one as human beings. But more importantly, to the point, is capitalism is what hastens us into becoming homeless because. People want to make money off of where folks live, and I totally agree with you. So what was some of the things that were the outcome of this meeting, Robert, that you went to?
Oh, it was supposed to be a 3-hour meeting, turned into a 4-hour meeting. There were 200 people there. There were probably 15 or 20 speakers. I mean, there were the people that go out and meet homeless people and help them and take care of them and pick up their trash.
That would be organizations like Join.
Yeah, and there were people that find them homes. Mm-hmm. There were the people there's all these organizations. I mean, I think everybody should try to go to these meetings, especially Mary, because it's not nothing is being done. Mm-hmm. It's like a lot is being done, and it's, you know, it's true. It's still a problem. But I think that, to me, the upshot of the meeting was we're really trying pretty hard, and Ted Wheeler is not doing nothing. This is the main thing he does as mayor, okay? I mean, people just, wake up. She should go to these meetings. She could talk to him. He's there. Well, he's walking around in street clothes talking to people, okay?
Okay.
She should go there and find out.
Well, thanks for showing us some other sides of what's going on. And, you know, when solutions do present themselves out of these public meetings, our job is to also make sure that the electeds follow through with what they say they're going to do.
I think one of the things that Robert is sharing, one of the main point is that we have an opportunity, certainly in our communities, to be part of the solution. And it's certainly strenuous, and it's a lot of work, and people always don't have enough time because we just have to make enough just to pay our bills. But there are ways and communities and partnerships that are taking place, and people are making an effort. Certainly not enough, but unless we all are in there together, nothing will ever be done. Thank you, Robert,
yes,
for that.
For your call and your information.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay.
And bye. So, you know, our topic really is how we deal with the programming that's teaching us to be inhumane to each other. With regard to this coronavirus and other disease events. But it's really important that we remember that if people don't have the means to stay healthy, to live inside, to wash their hands with soap and water, you know, to healthcare, it means that all of us get weaker. Mm-hmm. You know, all of us get sicker. And then the fact that we meet those people with hostility and anger and hatred, well, that even doubly weakens your immune system because, you know, science and especially for those who love science has proven that it's when we show love and affection and consideration and compassion and empathy that our bodies and our minds are healthier. So don't be a hater. Don't be a hater. It's going to make you sick. We got a few minutes left. Let's see if we can get to Linda and Mitch. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Is this Linda?
Yeah. Hi, Celeste.
Hi.
I wanted to say I do understand the frustration Mary has and that it looks like there's lots of stuff going on, but nothing looks like it happened. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the big problems is we keep working within a structure that tries to pretend that these half solutions can work. We, you know, all settled for a $15 an hour wage that still hasn't come when it already costs $18 to $20 an hour to live in Portland.
Yeah. 25
and
to 30.
And we all settle for half, you know, and we have 18,000 empty units because we allow speculation to come into town and we won't develop structures that force development to do what Portland needs, not what speculation needs. My suggestions are we really, and I really mean this, that we immediately move to an $18 an hour minimum wage and that we immediately move to a moratorium on building and we set a empty unit fee structure for people who have, for these speculated empty places so that they're forced basically either to pay for it, the taxes can go back into other housing, or to open those to reasonable rents. I think we need to take like bold gestures like Berlin did, and I think that's partly why Bernie Sanders is really appealing to people because we've seen us. We fought for the minimum wage and we raised that minimum wage and I think it just went up to 13. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't live on 13.
No, you can't.
So we have to, and at the same time that the safety nets went away, which was under the Clintons and went along with mass incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
That's when all those
draconian cuts to welfare.
Yeah. All of that happened when we took
under
away
Clinton.
The safety nets.
Mm-hmm.
We also gave more subsidies to the biggest companies. I think Wells Fargo for foreclosing and cheating all those people got $340 billion in bailouts.
Yes.
We could house everyone in Portland for the rest of their lives on what we gave Wells Fargo.
And that's one of the ways capitalism fails and we lie to ourselves about. You know, it failed.
And we let our Democratic leaders like the governor and others go, boy, we came out with a real victory when we know it's not a victory.
That's right.
The other thing I wanted to say is Portland lose all over the city, anywhere there's a plaza, so all of us can use a bathroom when we're out and about. And also free transportation. There's a wonderful center. We gave some books to a new shelter, and I say wonderful. It's not really wonderful. It's wonderful compared to ones that don't have day centers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've made some real efforts to make this a place where there's computer centers where people can be. However, nobody has any. $2.50 a ride in your bus. You can't get to jobs. You can't get to filling out your forms at some place. You can't travel anywhere because you're out in Southeast, you know, three miles from the nearest big grocery store, and no transportation. We must have free transportation. People can't get up on their feet if they can't get somewhere.
Right.
Well, I can't argue with you there. And if you work for yourself, you know that you pay into TriMet. So maybe what we need to do is have some comments with TriMet. That's something we can do on a grassroots level that can affect some of the changes that you mentioned.
Yeah, and some of these are in different areas, of course, and they're in different parts of the government and where the funding comes from. But I swear, if we had the will, rather than to sit and complain about these filthy people on the street, if we had the will as a city, we need to take bold push through this stuff. We can't take the incremental. We've been doing the incrementals, and the streets are getting fuller. You and I all know that. We've all lived here all these years.
All right. Well, thank you for reminding us of ways that we can activate our concern and empathy for folks. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you so much for the show, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
We got just a few minutes, Mitch. Let's see if we can get you in before they cut us off.
Yeah, I just think that there's a lot of useful resources that I found just by being curious about, because these are complicated problems and they're not just unique to any state or city. It's going on all over the world. So there must be a business model behind it, and people can use YouTube, which I refer to as U as in University of Tube. There's stuff on there,
like,
and there are people who have been talking about these issues for years who are never going to be invited onto Marketplace or This Week on Wall Street or whatever your business program you're tuned into. They teach at the best universities in the world, but they're not in the golden Rolodex. So get online, and if folks have a pen or pencil, one of the best people talking about this problem is a woman who's a professor at Columbia. You don't have to have special knowledge. She speaks very plainly, very simply, all over the world. Her name is Dr. Saskia Sassen, S-A-S-S-E-N. And she's been talking about the financialization of real estate. It doesn't get wonky. It's very simple. It's very easy to understand. She does get into details. You don't have to go to her hour-long talks on YouTube. Go to the ones where they're 20 or 30 minutes. In fact, there will be a movie opening in the United States, a documentary from a Swedish filmmaker that sources her and a bunch of others that can't get on the air. The name of the movie, you can look at the promos on it on YouTube. It's called Push, as in everyone is getting pushed out of where they live.
Yeah.
And this Swedish documentary filmmaker, and that's because they have public interest TV in Sweden, not something where corporations pay for public TV in Sweden. No, so they can do an independent study. They went around the world, and they were looking at the business models that have created this global crisis of housing.
Mm-hmm.
And the film is in English, and it's just look up Push the Film from Sweden on, because it might not even open in the United States, because there are very organized business forces that want to exclude the remedies other countries have found.
Of course.
For instance, if you look up solving homelessness, Finland has tried things that have been working that we can't even get talked about.
Well, that's because everything is monetized here in the United States. And once you accept that, then you can recognize that there's solutions outside the box that they won't tell us about.
Well, I just want you and your listeners to feed their own curiosities, look independently online, and then share the information, because it won't be catered to people in the United States. There are countries that have public interest broadcasting. We do not.
All right.
Well, thank you so much. Mitch, for that piece of information. And I love how succinctly you put it, because that gives us enough time to thank everybody who called. And Mary, you know, take that frustration and make it fuel to change. But remember what you can do, too, because, I may not be part of the city anymore, but I'm still part of other efforts to help deal with not just the larger issue of how we treat each other, but the specific issue of where can I live? This is your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, coming up in scant minutes is the Old Mole Variety Hour, followed by a lot more public affairs programming here, brought to you by you. If you're not yet a KBOO supporter and you're just a KBOO listener, please support us. Go to our webpage, www.kboo.fm, and donate, or call us. Low Tech is good at 503. About to give the wrong dynamic here. 503-231-8187. We want to thank you for calling, listening, supporting, and growing with us here on More Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Development Committee will meet the first Wednesday of each month at 4:30 p.m.
Well, good morning. You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. This is listener-supported community radio. It is time now for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Denise Morris, your host for this February 3rd Monday. Patricia Kohlberg is our engineer. This morning on the Old Mole, Laurie Mercier talks to Joe Trotter about his important new book, Workers on Arrival, Black Labor in the Making of America. Joe William Trotter Jr. is professor of history and social justice and founder and director of the Center for African American Urban Studies and the Economy at Carnegie Mellon University. Desiree Hallegers reads her recent op-ed, A Love Letter to Pike Place Market, written for Real Change, Seattle's street newspaper.